Moncrief on News Talk.
And we're joined on the stage by human rights campaigner slash food columnist for the Irish Examiner, Colm O'Gorman. Colm, how are you?
I'm good, Sean. How are you?
Are you well?
I am. Welcome to Wexford.
Thank you very much for having us down. You know, since you said, I suppose since you left Amnesty, now you are working with refugees.
Yeah.
It's a bit less high profile than the previous gig.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, though, I have to say. you know what the place formerly known as Twitter can be like at the best of times.
Yes, indeed.
So
When we were talking to Mert, I already just had to block a fella who was raving about...
You can't even talk about strawberries with
it. No, because he mentioned climate change. So
all right,
off,
okay. Well, that
which is a fake thing. Mert made the whole thing up, obviously. So you probably don't miss that, I imagine.
I mean, I loved the work, but after, what was it, about almost 30 years, really, on the front line of lots of big, what some people like to describe as controversial issues or challenging issues and everything that went with it, it was certainly nice not to have to be, it's been nice not to have to be out there as much and not to have to deal with all of that as much.
Yeah. Given what we've seen happen in the local elections, not to any huge degree, but people have got elected now. You were one of the people previously who'd been a lightning rod. They could kind of coalesce around their collective hatred for you.
Yeah.
Roderick O'Gorman kind of took that over.
They confused the two of us anyway, because we're both called O'Gorman and we both have beards and they're not the brightest of people on the
stage.
So I've regularly, been accused of being a desperate minister completely.
the refugees settlement initiative is not the hard end, but like this is what we're supposed to be doing with refugees. This is integrating them into communities.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working over the last couple of years with an organisation called the Global Refugee Sponsorship Initiative, which is a very catchy title.
Mm.
And what we do is we support the development of programmes that allow communities to come together to welcome refugees. So rather than this being a programme that's run by the state or by government where people are placed in an area, actually it's the community that comes together and says, we'd like to welcome a family or we'd like to welcome a group of refugees. They get the support and the training to assist them with that, and then they welcome the people into their community. So it's very much community-based.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. It started in Canada in the late 1970s, and I went over there in 2017 to look at it. And the thing that blew me away about it wasn't just the outcomes for refugees who'd arrived through that means, but actually the outcomes for communities. You saw levels of community cohesion and community connection. You know, and I think that's something that we're missing a lot. Like community solidarity, it's not that it's broken down massively, but there aren't the same kind of connections across communities anymore. We're much more mobile. I mean, when I lived in Wexford town, nobody commuted to Dublin. Now half of Wexford commutes to Dublin every day to go to work. So our connection in the communities in which we live, that's in some ways can be a little bit weakened. So these kinds of programs, they just bring people together with a common purpose. They end up doing something that they become incredibly passionate about, that's incredibly rewarding, and they foster and develop connections, not just with the newcomers that they've welcomed into their community, but across their own communities in ways that are really, really transformative. It's incredible.
Yeah, and how does that work? Does a community approach you? Do you approach a community? Is there a lesson for government in the way these things work?
Well, I mean, first of all, governments are partners in this program. So community sponsorship programs are partnerships between civil society, communities and organizations working in the community and states and governments. So governments ultimately are responsible for the rights and the safety, the security and for the well-being of refugees that are brought to a country. But in this case, community partners with government to provide that welcome and integration support. So how it would normally work is an individual or a group of people within a community come together and say, we'd like to do this, we'd like to sponsor. It's called sponsorship, community sponsorship. We'd like to sponsor or support a family or some newcomers to arrive into our community. They'll get in touch with the people who run the programme. And that's a number of organisations, NASC, the Red Cross, the Irish Refugee Council, and Doris down in Limerick. Or they can go to a website called the opencommunity.ie where they'll read a lot about the programme. Then they're provided with training and support to prepare to welcome a family. And once they've done that work and gotten that support and they're ready to welcome the family, they'll be matched with a family or one or two individuals who they'll then welcome into their community. And the difference is, when a refugee arrives under the mainstream resettlement program, they arrive at the airport and they're met by immigration officials. Under this program, they arrive at the airport and they're met by their new community, who bring them to their new home, who are then befriend them for about 18 months and support them as their friends in integrating into their community. I mean, who knows our communities better than us? Who's better placed to help a family who are, you know, seeking protection and need to rebuild a new life? Who's better placed to help them build a life in our communities than the people of our communities? So it's an amazing program.
Yeah. Given the amount of protests we've seen and all that kind of stuff, have you noticed any chilling effect in terms of people's enthusiasm for doing this kind of
thing? I mean, not really once people do it. And I also think, frankly, you know, I think there are reasons why people are concerned about levels of immigration, and though there are valid reasons why we're concerned about that. Mm-hmm. The pressures on housing, the pressure on services, those are very real. We don't just have a housing crisis in this country that's gone on for, gosh, over a decade now. It's nearly two decades, isn't it? We have a housing catastrophe at this point. So there are very real pressures and very real reasons why we have concerns about our capacity to provide for each other and to provide for people. So those are completely valid reasons. But I think a lot of the time, the way it's talked up, frankly, particularly by political correspondents, who I think have created a narrative that migration is the big issue in ways that actually doesn't reflect what's happening in the world. Yes, there are people who are concerned. Yes, there are people who are opposed. Yes, there are people who are hateful, but they're a very tiny minority of people. But there are also, I mean, right now, for instance, there are about 20,000 Ukrainian refugees who are being hosted by more than 10,000 families across Ireland. And they've been hosted by them, and there may be people in the audience who are doing this. There's certainly people in the area who've been in this. They've been hosted by them for more than 2 years. If somebody had said to us when we were looking at community sponsorship a few years ago that we could have 10,000 Irish families who would be hosting in their homes or in properties near to them more than 20,000 refugees, nobody would have believed that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's another example would be there's an amazing, does anybody know Tallow down in Waterford? Little small town, about 1,000 people. Amazing group down there. They've welcomed 5 families in 3 years into Tallow. And when you go down and see how much that community has come together in that effort and how much those families are part of that community, it's mind-blowing. It's phenomenal. But we don't hear about that stuff because it doesn't fill the column inches of Paul Carr's columns, or, you know, it doesn't create that kind of tension. Too often we want to talk about tension and division more than we want to talk about how we come together and the things that we can do together. And actually, most people are just getting on with their lives and trying to live the best way they possibly can for themselves, for their families and for their communities. And most people who get involved in this work around community welcome or community sponsorship, they're doing it because they see that there are people in need of protection. They see that they could be powerful in that and do something. And most of the time, as ordinary people, we don't have a chance to be powerful in the face of big global problems. Things like this let us be incredibly powerful. And their response is, well, it's a humanitarian one. They're doing it not because they want to be political or because they want to be activists. They're doing it because they're moved by their humanity to do it, and they just get on with it. But that impulse and that kind of work doesn't grab the attention of sections of our media, particularly, I think, frankly, our political media, that talking about division and hate and toxicity gets. Now, that doesn't in any way diminish the fact that we have seen an extraordinary number of arson attacks on properties. Mm-hmm. We've seen rises in violence in quite hateful protest. But we've also seen communities quite reasonably say, we are concerned about, for example, a site that was earmarked for a nursing home, which we really need for our community, that now won't be available to us. How will this be managed? Those are completely reasonable questions that we have to grapple with collectively and that government, frankly, have to respond to more effectively.
Yeah, and why haven't they responded to it more effectively? It's not like, you know,
to be fair,
the Ukraine war is 2 years old. None of this is a surprise.
I mean, I agree none of it's a surprise. And I do remember when it was kicking off, and I don't know if other people remember this, but at one point we had senior government ministers, and I think even the Taoiseach at the time, Leo Varadkar, was saying that we could have up to 200,000 people from Ukraine coming to the country. We actually had about 104,000 in total that have arrived. Mm. There's not that many here now because some have left, but it's still in the high 80,000s, I think, who are here. The volume of what was coming was really significant. And that's in the context of a country like our refugee resettlement program normally receives between 600 and 800 people per year. And that followed on off the back of the Afghan crisis, when actually Ireland, and I was in Amnesty at the time, and we were working to evacuate people from Afghanistan and bring them to Ireland. And I know, again, in Wexford, there are people who hosted Afghan refugees that we managed to bring to Ireland as well. And Ireland was actually, frankly, really almost depressingly exceptional in that globally. They were brilliant in how they responded to that, mm-hmm. both at the level of government and the level of society. But that was about another 600 people. And then suddenly we have 104,000 people arriving from Ukraine in a way that we can't plan for, because in a war situation, particularly when it's in your neighbourhood, and if people have a right to arrive, they'll just arrive. So very difficult to plan for it. So, you know, I've a certain degree of sympathy for the fact that the pressure and the load of work that needed to be done was exceptional. I mean, it's extraordinary what had to be done. And I think whilst we absolutely should now, 2 years on, be talking about the need to plan better, and we should hold government to account to do a better job as we move all of this forward, doesn't do any harm either for us all to acknowledge collectively, and that isn't just government, but as a society, as a people, as a state, we've done something extraordinary. We've managed in the face of all of that to welcome and provide sanctuary to well over 100,000 people who were fleeing a war in Europe. Nobody would have imagined that a few years ago. Yeah. So yeah, let's do better, but let's also acknowledge what we've done well, and let's learn from it how we could do it even better again.
How's the food column going?
That's great. I mean, that's great crack. That came about because when the do you remember the pandemic, people?
Yeah. No.
When that all started and we went into lockdown, I, like many other people, thought we'd be there for maybe 4 to 6 weeks. And I was at home just north of Goree thinking, what can I do every day that will give people something else to think about? Like, it's going to be very dull. How do we build some kind of routine? So I said, I know, what I'll do is I'll write a new recipe every day and I'll share it on my social media, so on Twitter and on Instagram, because I had a decent follow on Twitter when Twitter was a nice place to be. So I said I would do that every day and started doing it and thought it would be for 4 weeks. And then 120 recipes later, realised it was going on longer and people were reacting to it very well. And then the Examiner asked me, could they run a few? And then they asked me, would I do a weekly cookery column? So I've been doing that ever since.
Yeah. So at this stage, is there a finite amount of recipes in the world?
Not at all.
Are you, you know, it's not...
No, I mean...
Throwing together mad things.
I mean, I have to say, I love it. I've always been really passionate about food. I started cooking when I was about 7. And it's just always been a big part of my life. I've loved it. I worked in the hospitality industry for a few years. It was somewhere I could have headed. Mm. Had my life kind of taken a different direction, I could have ended up in there. So, and it's a fabulous kind of creative outlet. It's so different to everything else that I do. And no, there's no shortage of food.
Yeah.
There's no shortage of ingredients. There's no shortage of new things to discover. And one of the great joys about maybe living at the time that we live now is we're experiencing an awful lot more. Like, I remember when the Lotus House opened in Wexford in the late 1970s, right? If anybody else remembers that. And like getting Chinese food for the first time, and it was sweet and sour like chicken balls, which was as far from Chinese food as you possibly get. But we thought it was, like, that was when coleslaw, when like Quinsworth started selling coleslaw, that was exotic, right? Yeah. But now look at what we're at. You know, like you can find ingredients from all over the world in any town, or frankly, like often in many villages in the country. And if you can't get them, you can get them delivered from some supplier somewhere around the country. So we're being exposed to lots of new ingredients and lots of new ideas. And actually, what I think is really exciting about what we're doing in Ireland with that is we're taking those ingredients and using them in our own way. So we're doing some really interesting things with food in Ireland. Like, nobody would have said 30 years ago, people would have said Ireland has great ingredients, a few of them, but they might not have said that we've a great cuisine, and I think we're starting to develop
that. Yeah, indeed. Have you been watching The Bear?
Yeah, I had to show, I remember one week of the column I had to do the cola braised short ribs because I was completely fascinated by it, they did in The Bear in that season. Yeah, it's intense. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I wouldn't want to work on it. That Christmas episode, does anybody else watch The Bear?
Oh, yeah.
You watched that? That was unbearable, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But oh, bad pun. But it's fantastic. I love it. I'm looking forward to getting into the next season.
Oh, no. Yeah, you just need to lie down for a while.
For about
in a darkened room.
Don't watch it just before you go to bed. Yes. Top tip.
Yeah. Colm, thanks a million. Lovely
thanks,
to see you again. Colm O'Gorman there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.